Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
I became a private investigator because of my face. It's an ordinary looking face, but if I ask, how are you? Sometimes people start crying. I'm getting a divorce, they say. He ended our marriage by text. Or an immaculately dressed woman suddenly tells me, I hate my job so much I want to kill myself. I've been saving up Ambien. Then we sit on a concrete curb, or stand in line at a train station, or clutch clear plastic cups at a party as the near stranger in front of me dabs away mascara with a cocktail napkin and dumps out her mind like it's her purse, like I'm the one who can sift through the dust and use tissues to find what she's looking for.
That's Erica Krauss reading the opening paragraphs of Tell Me Everything, the story of a private investigation. It's a combination of memoir and literary true crime. Erica shares her story of how her self-described, ordinary-looking face led her to a career as a private investigator. She was assigned to investigate a sexual assault. The case involved a college student who was attacked by athletes at a party. Working on the case unearthed some of Erica's own trauma with sexual violence. The case became a national scandal and a historic civil rights case. Erica joined us to talk about the case, how the investigation affected her, and her impromptu career as a private investigator.
Working as a PI was actually really fun to write about because it was a hard job, definitely a hard job, and you saw a lot of human nature that it was difficult to see, but that was fun. And it was also easy in a certain way because it was a lived experience that I had documented incredibly well. So I had all my memos, I had all this documentation, all these dialogues. The hard thing about that was organizing it. Because there was so much. There was just not just my experience, but also everything in the news and everything in the court. And that was difficult. So my outline was 100,000 words, which is 400 pages. That was the hard part of that. But writing it was actually kind of easy because it was almost more like revising than it was actually writing. But writing my own experience was difficult because I'd never done it before. Mm-hmm. I never wrote about it ever. I don't think I even wrote about it in journals. So it was just something I avoided at all costs. And here I was going to write about it in a book. So it was sort of like pounding through a concrete wall, trying to sort of get to some things that I had buried for a very, 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 very long time.
Mm-hmm. What is it about you that makes people share the most intimate details and secrets of their lives with you?
Well, I could ask the same thing about you, probably, right?
I don't know. I wouldn't have as good an answer.
You wouldn't answer. You would if I could see you. No. I thought about it a lot, actually, because I was like, okay, well, it's just something. I look familiar. I look ordinary. I look like everybody's third grade friend. And they're like, oh, I get called every name in the world. Hey, Violet, I haven't seen you in 40 years. No, I'm not Violet, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think beyond that, I thought about it because during this period, the pandemic, when we were all masked and most of my face was covered, the same thing happened. People just talked to me a lot. They, you know, the clerk at the grocery store would tell me that her daughter was in the hospital, or it was constant. It never stopped even then. So now I'm just kind of thinking that people are dying to talk and reveal things about themselves. I think there's a hunger for that. I think a lot of life doesn't really allow for it. You have to put on a role or a mask. And then whenever there's an opening, if you see someone with that kind of face where you feel like you can talk to them for some reason, then you do. I think that's what it is. I don't think it's like unlocking secrets and cracking things open. I think people are really dying to disclose the hidden parts of them because it hurts to hide.
Mm-hmm. Especially as you mentioned during the pandemic when there was more isolation and people didn't have as much access to other people. Yeah, that makes total sense. How did you become a private investigator?
It was so random. So I was in a bookstore and a lawyer we were both in the same section of the books and he just started talking to me and he told me all these secrets about his life. And it was very normal for me, but he actually very quickly became shocked at what he was telling me. And he was almost even a little angry. And I said, it's okay. You know, this happens to me all the time. Please don't worry. I won't tell anybody. And he immediately saw a way to use that in for his practice. And he, you know, in a nice way, right? And he hired me right there on the spot in a bookstore after 10 minutes of conversation. And I said, I don't have any experience as a private investigator. And he said, perfect. And then we moved forward from there. It's so strange because your life never really fits a narrative arc. It doesn't really fit narrative, right? When you're going along your day and you're feeding your dog or whatever, it's not like that. But this case, this 5-year period of my life really did fit a story. And that's why I ended up writing about it, because I don't think I'd ever write another memoir, because I don't have another period of my life that works that way. But this one, upon retrospect, at one point I was like, this is a story. And it's a story that also needs to be told, because nobody's talking about this case. And it was the first Title IX sexual assault case in history. And it led to everything else and led to a lot of changes. So for me, that was, it was, again, a giant coincidence that this even could be a story.
What did this lawyer who you identify by the name Grayson, what did he ask you to investigate? You talked about it a bit, this Title IX case, but could you give us a little more detail about it?
So the woman who was the plaintiff, whom I call Simone, she was sexually assaulted at a party, a girls-only party that she was having at home, when 20 to 30 football players and recruits showed up at her door and crashed the party. She was already intoxicated, so she went to lie down, and between 5 and 8 football players and recruits surrounded her, sexually assaulted her, and trashed the apartment and then left. But there were, besides those 5 to 8, there were many, many more in the very small apartment. So that was what happened. And again, it was thrown out by the DA. So it ended up in our laps. Yeah.
Many of the people you were talking to as a PI would have information that they'd like to hide. So I'm wondering, were there tricks you learned that made it easier to get information out of them?
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting because I found I had already learned many of these tricks, and I think many of us have, but I think it's more common to learn socialization tricks if you have experienced trauma in your life. I think there are things you do, for example, say, you know, in my case, I had a hard home life, so I would do anything to get out of the home. So I learned how to make people like me. I just would do anything to make them like me. One of the things that you do is you ask them a lot of questions about themselves, and you ask important questions too. This is the simplest PI trick I've ever encountered, and it really is so easy. You just ask the questions other people don't ask because they're trying to be polite or they're trying to be respectful. As a PI, if you just ask the question, people have maybe never been asked those questions before. You know, they'll say something like, "It's a long story," and then you say, "What's the long story?" They have a choice, of course. They can tell you or they cannot tell you. But sometimes people are not just being evasive. They're trying to be polite and trying not to dump on you. But they really do want to talk to you. They really do want to tell you things. So, and there are lots of things that we do naturally with body language or, you know, with our speech. But beyond it, the things that make us do those things with our body language and our speech is really a desire to know. And I think that's more of a personality thing. Like, do you want to know or do you not want to know about the person in front of you? If they say it's a long story or it was brutal, do you say what was brutal about it? Or are you saying, ooh, no, goodbye, see you later, you know? And I just, you know, and some of us, I think this may be true of you too, is we want to know. Mm-hmm. We're curious about it.
Definitely, yeah. And one of the tricks, one of the expressions that you would often use to great effect was, "We're just talking here."
Right. "We're just talking here." That was my favorite. And I got that actually from one of my interviewees, football player. You know, he didn't want to tell me something, but he did. So then finally, he just said, "Okay, we're just talking here, right?" And then I use that all the time. But there's this idea almost of from TV, that there's some kind of permanent record, that like you say something to a PI and that means anything, like they can just take that to court and that, you know, and it's somehow on record as you spoke this thing and it's concrete. So a lot of times I would just tell people, oh, we're just talking here. It's there, because it was actually true. There, I wasn't recording these phone conversations or in-person conversations, because it didn't matter if I was. You can't take that to court. So I'd say, we're just talking here. And then they'd open up more. Or I'd say, this is off the record, but there's no record.
Right, exactly. Yeah. One of the recurring themes in Tell Me Everything is your relationship with your mother. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I can talk about what it was. I can't talk about what it is now. But I can say,
fair enough.
You know, back then it was, I really wanted to be seen by her. I wanted her to even just acknowledge what I had grown up with and the abuse, the sexual abuse. And again, like we talked just a second ago about people who want to know and people who don't want to know. And I can't say what she wanted, but my experience was that it was very, very difficult to get through. And I tried and I tried and I tried. And I always felt like there must be some way that I'm not trying. There's some secret lock to the door and I can open it and then I can get through. Because what I was doing wasn't working. Every time I tried to tell her, she would basically reject me in some way or eventually disown me. And part of the reason I did focus on that is after she disowned me, I looked everywhere for books about that. I wanted to hear other people's experiences. What's it like to be disowned by your family? What, this isn't medieval China, you know, this is modern day. And what's that like now, right? You know, there's no exile of today, but it is a form of exile. So I looked and I looked and I couldn't find anything. I could find nothing on this topic, not on the internet, not in books. And I thought, well, I can't be the only person in the world who has been disowned by a parent. You know, I have to write about it. And there might be someone else who needs to read about that, because I know I sure did. I definitely did. And since I wrote it, I've heard from some people who said, you know, I've never seen anyone write about this, but I have a similar relationship to yours with your mother. And, you know, that made me feel less alone. So that makes me feel really happy to know that there are other people who can connect, who can just know that they're not the only one.
Yeah, if you don't mind my asking, why did your mother disown you?
Well, that's between her and herself. I could only speculate on her feelings. But I do know there was a lot of resistance to her acknowledging what had happened to me.
Mm-hmm. What kind of psychic toll did writing your memoir take on you?
Oh, it was so hard. You know, at first, when I started, I started by just organizing, and that took a long time. But then when I actually started writing, at first I was like, oh, this is easy. I don't have to make anything up. There's no, because with fiction, you have so many choices. Anything can happen. But with memoir, you already know the whole story and everything's already, it's done. It's a fact. So I don't know. A little more time passed and I was like, okay, well, this is kind of hard. And then the deeper I got in, the more difficult it was, until by the end, I was like, this is the hardest thing I've ever written in my life. It was emotionally difficult. And there were times when I really had to put my head down on my desk and type blindly. And then I'd look up and see that it was gibberish and then I had to do it again. But it was hard. And I think, again, part of that is that feeling of exposure and vulnerability that was difficult for me, because I'm actually a very private person. But at the time when I was working on this case, I never intended to write about the cases that I was writing about. I assumed someone else would. So maybe the lawyer would write about it, or the plaintiffs would write about it, or a witness or somebody else. So it's not like when you have an experience and you're sort of collecting fodder for later. It was never that for me. It was actually a big surprise for me to write about PI work.
Well, I'm glad you were the one to write about it, because I don't think the book, no disrespect to Grayson or anyone else, I don't think anyone else would have written as compelling and fascinating and as important a book. Erica Krauss, thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on Tell Me Everything.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here. It was such a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
That was Erica Krauss. She's the author of Tell Me Everything. You can find out everything about Erica at WPR.org/beta.
He's kind of defined in some ways by what he's not. He's contemporaneous with the Brat Pack and that gang, but not really a part of that circle socially.
Coming up, Critic and journalist Keith Phipps explores four decades of Hollywood history through the multifaceted career of the inimitable Nicolas Cage. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.